You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is your host, Corbin Smith, for Locked On Seahawks. Glad to have you listening in for our Thursday show. We've got a loaded podcast coming your way, including our latest installment of Tinder Thursday with Seattle's exclusive rights free agents and the final chapter of our Russell Wilson trade tour with Marcus Mosier of Locked On Cowboys. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. As the carnage ensues across the league with a bunch of players being cut for salary cap purposes prior to free agency, Golden Tate has officially hit the market. Now the big question, could the Seahawks be interested in a potential reunion? This is a pretty touchy subject when you're talking about the 2010 second round pick out of Notre Dame, especially when you look at his history with quarterback Russell Wilson. Might be something the Seahawks are going to be cautious with because you don't necessarily want to throw gasoline onto the fire that has been the Russell Wilson saga as of late. But when you look at Tate's departure back in 2014, he left as a free agent and signed with the Detroit Lions. There were rumors that began to swirl about a possible fallout between him and Russell Wilson. And this has never been confirmed, but there were reports, there were rumors out there that Tate had an intimate relationship with Wilson's ex-wife, Ashton. Nothing has come to light over the years legitimizing these claims. Whether it's true or not, Tate has had to publicly address the situation several times. Russell Wilson hasn't talked about it at all. He has stayed silent over the years since Tate left for Detroit. So who really knows what this relationship looks like, if there even is one now at this point? Tate called Matthew Stafford a few years back the best passer he's ever had throw to him. So he's taken some subtle shots at Russell Wilson here and there. But time does heal wounds. And when you look at Golden Tate as a player, the guy can still play. Last year, his production wasn't great. He only played in 12 games for the New York Giants. 35 receptions, 388 yards, 2 touchdowns. But the year before, mostly playing with a rookie quarterback then in Daniel Jones, 676 receiving yards and 6 touchdown receptions. And he did that in 11 games. Did not play in 5 of those games. He was suspended at the beginning of the season after signing a contract. And so he was pretty productive given the circumstances in 2019. He's going to be 33 years old during the 2021 season. So he is now heading into the tail end of his career, but he's still very effective after the catch. This is a guy that's only a few years removed from 795 yards with the Lions and Eagles during the 2018 season. If he was able to come close to producing that kind of production as Seattle's number 3 receiver behind DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, it would instantly upgrade the passing game. That was one of the bigger reasons Seattle's offense sputtered in the last couple of months. They didn't have that third target that emerged that became a factor that could take some of the pressure off of Metcalf and Lockett. Opponents played a lot of those two deep coverages to take away the deep ball. And quite frankly, that third receiver or tight end couldn't pick up the slack in the passing game. And the Seahawks were never able to overcome that situation. And so I think you bring in a player like Tate, one of the big weaknesses for this team the last 3 or 4 years has been the inability to create after the catch. Even at his age, Tate is still one of the best in the business in that. He hasn't really lost a step. He's a player that has produced 12 touchdowns since 2018. He can create after the catch. He makes defenders miss. He's had so many epic touchdowns over the years where he has broken through arm tackles or he's juked guys out. And he's still capable of doing that to an extent. He also can win contested catches with the best of them. He did that in Seattle. He's more refined now at this stage of his career. I think you look at the role that he would be playing. Again, you wouldn't be signing Golden Tate for him to be your number one or number two receiver. You're bringing him in at this stage as a complementary target that excels out of the slot, can create after the catch, break tackles. You could use him some on jet sweeps still. He hasn't really ran the ball much in recent seasons, but he is a player that gives you some flexibility. I think he'd be a lot of fun in Shane Waldron's offense as well. You know he's going to get after people as a blocker. That's something that the Rams have looked for from their receivers, particularly the ones playing in the slot. You're going to get that effort and that tenacity out of Golden Tate. He's been doing it for a long time. The big question is going to be cost. And I think when you look at the number of receivers that are hitting the market that are going to be commanding a lot of money and are significantly younger than Golden Tate, then I think you're looking at a player, given his age, the fact he's coming off of the worst season of his career yardage-wise since his rookie year. I just don't think that teams are going to be throwing much money at Golden Tate. I think his next landing spot, he's not going to be getting a big payday. When you consider that a lot of the teams in the league are still trying to get under the salary cap, I don't think that teams are going to be throwing big offers at him. He's not going to be getting 3 or 4 year contracts. He's past that stage in his career. I think the Seahawks can sign him at an affordable rate on a 1 year contract. What it really boils down to, if the price is going to match up though, is Russell Wilson on board? Is this a relationship that can coexist again? We don't know what happened back when Tate left, but clearly there's been some animosity between these two guys. And it's been a long time. It's been 7 years since he last played in Seattle. So again, time heals wounds. Maybe these two can come together. They can make it work. Who knows if Russell Wilson's in Seattle this next year? That's also the other wrench that's being thrown in here. But certainly Golden Tate should be a player the Seahawks look at and have some interest potentially adding to their receiving core so they can have an upgrade at that number three spot and working out of the slot. When we return for the second quarter, it's Tinder Thursday. Moving on to exclusive rights free agents. The Seahawks have six of them heading into free agency. Going to take a look at those six players, which ones the Seahawks should put an exclusive rights tender on and which ones they should let walk. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it is now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing the only brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com and in your pocket. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car and truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith. Glad to have you listening in for our Thursday show. We're covering everything you need to know about the Seahawks, but what about the rest of sports? Now the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with Locked On Today. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski, and it's all the sports news you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get podcasts. It's Tinder Thursday. We've been doing this for a large chunk of the offseason. We were looking at clusters of unrestricted free agents. The Seahawks currently have 22 of those after Greg Olsen and Mike Iupati announced their retirements. We also looked at their three restricted free agents last week on our Thursday show. So now we're going to switch gears to exclusive rights free agents and decide whether to swipe right and tender them or swipe left to decline and let them become unrestricted free agents. Now, exclusive rights free agents, much different than restricted and unrestricted free agents. These are players whose contracts have expired, but they have fewer than 3 accrued years in the league. If that player's team offers him a contract, he cannot negotiate or sign with any other team. So it's pretty cut and dry. And these aren't expensive players either. You're looking at $780,000 or $850,000 to apply an exclusive rights tender. These are not guys that are going to break your salary cap. So let's look at the six players that are scheduled to become exclusive rights free agents for the Seahawks later this month. Going to start in the backfield with Bo Scarborough. And I loved Scarborough when he played at Alabama. I know Washington fans out here in the Pacific Northwest still have nightmares about what he did to the Huskies defense during their bowl game a few years back. Big bruising back that has great speed for his size. And unfortunately, the biggest issue that he has had is staying healthy. And he isn't a guy that's going to give you a lot of reps at third down back either. He can catch the football, but that's not a strength in his game necessarily. He is an old school, early down between the tackles runner, and he just hasn't been able to stay healthy. That continued last year. The Seahawks signed him to their practice squad. He got elevated for week 11 against the Cardinals, and he ran well. He looked really good in Seattle's system that game. 6 carries for 31 yards. He's got that tall, lean frame, and he just kind of he glides. He's a guy that doesn't look like he's running very fast, but he's got those big strides, and he will lower the shoulder, and he will lower the boom on people. Unfortunately, he again got injured in that game, suffered a significant hamstring injury, underwent surgery, missed the rest of the season. So that was all the Seahawks got to see out of him. 1 game, 6 carries for 31 yards. Could he be brought back? He's going to be a very cheap insurance option. I could see Seattle maybe going back to that well during training camp, maybe bringing him in just to have him compete, maybe for one of the practice squad positions or one of the final spots of the depth chart. But I would swipe left right now just because as much as I like Bo Scarborough and I like his running style and I think it fits what the Seahawks have done over the last few years, for one thing, we don't know what the run game's going to look like with Shane Waldron as the play caller. If there's more emphasis on wide zone and stretch runs, I don't know that Bo Scarborough is a fit anymore, but really it comes down to the durability. He's just had too many issues staying healthy, both at the college level and in the NFL. Regardless who he's been with, he just hasn't been able to stay healthy. And so I'm swiping left again. Maybe he's a guy training camp. You could bring him in as another body to compete at the position. Certainly a player that Pete Carroll likes, but he just has not been able to stay healthy. Now going to the offensive line, Rob Rang and I mistakenly had Kyle Fuller on our restricted free agent list, and SpotTrack had him listed there as well. And so there were some credible sources that had that information incorrect, but he actually only has 2 accrued seasons in the NFL. And so he is an exclusive rights free agent. Other teams won't have the ability to sign him unless the Seahawks don't tender him. I'm actually going to swipe right in this instance. If he was a restricted free agent and I was paying more than $1.5 million to put a tender on him, it's not worth it. But $850,000 for a guy that can play center in both guard spots, sign me up. He's still a young player with some upside. He didn't look good in his one start, but it's worth noting that he had a high ankle sprain that he was playing through against the Rams for most of that game, and he battled through it. He should be commended for that instead of being criticized for how he performed. He was just trying to gut it out with no other centers available in that game. They ended up playing Damian Lewis in the center spot the next week because Fuller was not fully recovered from that injury. But his versatility, the fact that he's affordable, right now they don't have any centers under contract. Ethan Posick's heading towards free agency. There's a lot of different things that could happen there. They could draft a new center. They could sign one in free agency. I think having Fuller around at $850,000, he could turn around and cut him too. If you get a couple of centers in free agency in the draft, you could move on from him quickly and you wouldn't have to worry about any dead cap hits. And so I would swipe right with him. I think it's a good insurance policy to have on the offensive line. The other 4 players that are exclusive rights free agents for the Seahawks are all defensive players. We'll start up front in the trenches. Brian Monet, 345 pounds. He was 360 when they signed him out of Michigan. So he actually came to training camp a little bit lighter. Pete Carroll called him svelte. And he came in and looked really good in training camp and was one of their key defensive linemen early in the season. What really surprised me about Monet, you expected him to be a big-bodied run stuffer at the nose tackle position. That's what the Seahawks have him on board for primarily. But he offered some surprising contributions as a pass rusher last year. He played in 10 games. He wasn't injured reserve with an ankle injury for 6 games. We saw Snacks Harrison come in during that time. Harrison requested his release after Monet returned from injured reserve, and we saw how that played out with Harrison going to Green Bay. But in the 10 games that Monet played, he had 9 tackles, 2 quarterback hits, but this is really what tells the story. He had a 65.6 pass rush grade on Pro Football Focus. That's pretty darn good for a nose tackle, especially a 345-pound one like Monet, a big-bodied guy that's really known for his run-stuffing ability. He had 9 pressures on 137 snaps against the pass. I will take that any day of the week. He was disruptive, creating pressure, forcing his way into the pocket. He showed some surprising nimbleness for a player of his size as well. So this one's a no-brainer to me. Brian Monet, you're definitely going to be tendering this exclusive rights free agent, especially with Jaron Reed's future uncertain. You want to keep Brian Monet around at $850,000. That's cheap for a really solid, still emerging nose tackle in the middle of the defensive line. And then in the secondary, three players in the secondary that are scheduled to be exclusive rights free agents. Lynon Stephens is a player that's bounced around a bunch. He's been with the Dolphins, the Broncos. He's had a couple stints with the Seahawks. He's an undersized corner that can play slot. They used him some on the outside last year, sometimes out of necessity because of injuries. We saw how that secondary got ravaged throughout the year by injuries. He played 35 defensive snaps. He did dress for 13 games, played a lot of snaps on special teams. When he did play defense, he gave up 2 completions on 2 targets for 22 yards. Very limited sample size to be able to evaluate him, but when he was in, teams picked on him, as expected. I think Seattle can find other alternatives potentially in the secondary from a depth standpoint, but because Stevens does have special teams value and he would only be $780,000 to tender, then I think he's absolutely worth swiping right for. He's a guy the Seahawks clearly like because they've brought him back a couple of different times. And he spent most of the year on the active 53-man roster, was on the practice squad for the rest of the year. So the organization holds him in high regard, still a young enough player. I think because he's got some special teams value, when he has played some defensive snaps, he's more refined than, say, Jason Stanley, who was another exclusive rights free agent for the Seahawks. I'm swiping right on Lynon Stephens. Speaking of Stanley, I'm swiping left on him because to me, this is the type of player you take a look at for a couple of years. He was a receiver at Georgia. He moved to safety and corner coming into the NFL. He was with the Jaguars for a little while, the Falcons as well. He's bounced around quite a bit. He's a player that maybe still has special teams upside. He's got good size and athleticism, but there really isn't a lot of value, and he missed a good chunk of the season on injured reserve as well. This is another player you could bring back cheap. He's only $780,000, but I'm really not sure that they're going to tender him at this point because it seems to me like they could bring in an undrafted rookie that's maybe more refined than what Stanley is. He's still trying to learn the position. He is a traits-based prospect that they try to develop. I just don't know that he's worth tendering at this point. I would swipe left and see if I can go another direction with an undrafted rookie if I'm really looking for project guys that I can develop in 2021. And Ryan Neal, other than Brian Monet, this is the other guy on this list that is a clear no-brainer that you're bringing him back. What a breakout season Ryan Neal had for the Seahawks last year. Jamal Adams gets hurt late in the Week 3 game against the Dallas Cowboys. Ryan Neal was elevated from the practice squad for that game, had only played a few snaps in the NFL. The Seahawks used him some on special teams the season before. He got to dress for a few games for the Atlanta Falcons. But this is a guy with minimal experience. And what's he do? He intercepts Dak Prescott in the end zone to end the game. The next week, his first career start, he gets an interception on Miami's opening possession. It was deflected by Cody Barton. He picks it off. Right place, right time, he makes the play. He just gave the Seahawks a ton of great snaps. Adams missed 4 games. With his groin injury, and Neal started all 4 of those games. He can play both safety spots. He's 6'3", got long arms, so he can play corner in a pinch too. He played both positions at Southern Illinois at the college level. The coaching staff loves his versatility. And you look at the production, 44 tackles, those 2 interceptions, 5 passes defensed. One of those led to an interception for Quandre Diggs against the Giants. And he also blocked a punt. So not only was he giving the Seahawks contributions, filling in for Adams, and as a sub-package player when they were playing in dime and they put a 6th defensive back on the field, he was also making big plays on special teams all season long. This is a player that told reporters he thought about quitting football several times, including after he was released at the end of training camp last September. He ended up sticking with it. And look what happened. I think now this is a no-brainer. $780,000, especially with Jamal Adams having a little bit of an injury history now. He's missed some games each of the last 2 seasons. He's had multiple surgeries. You want to have a player like that who can play multiple spots, and he can play corner again in a pinch too. He's far too valuable as a depth piece. He's got starting experience now. He can play special teams. So Ryan Neal will be welcome back. I will be stunned if the Seahawks did not tender him. This is, again, a no-brainer to bring in a very versatile piece as an insurance policy in the secondary. When we return in the third quarter, we're going to wrap up our Russell Wilson trade tour. Locked On Cowboys host Marcus Mosier is going to investigate the possibility of number three going to America's team and what the Cowboys might be willing to give up to get the superstar quarterback. You won't want to miss it. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, shows, and reality TV, real-time updated odds, and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Thursday edition. This is your host, Corbin Smith. Glad to have you listening in. Thursdays on Locked On NFL are a must listen as Ryan Tracy and Jake Liskow break down teams across the NFL from an analytics and team building perspective. Get the expert analysis on your favorite teams from Ryan and Jake every Thursday. Subscribe to Locked On NFL wherever you get your podcasts. It's time to put a bow on our Russell Wilson trade tour. We've been going all over the country this week with various hosts from the Locked On Podcast Network. Who better to finish off with than Marcus Mosier of Locked On Cowboys, America's team? Marcus, this has been such a bizarre saga over the last few weeks. Russell Wilson, most recently, his agent coming out saying he doesn't want to be traded. He wants to stay with the Seahawks, but there are four teams that he would be willing to play for if the Seahawks decide it's time to move on. And one of the teams that was on that short list was the Cowboys. And I don't know about you, but I think this might be the most intriguing team that is on the list just because of the fact Dak Prescott hasn't gotten a long-term deal. And there's a good chance that Dallas will franchise tag him again. Let's start off just talking fit here. Why do you think the Cowboys would be on that short list for Russell Wilson, and how would he fit in with Kellen Moore's offense in Dallas?
It's not hard to see why Russell Wilson would be interested, right? Because if everybody's healthy on the offensive line, you have a top 10 offensive line, maybe top five. You've got three really good receivers in Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, and Michael Gallup. You've got a running game with Ezekiel Elliott. And then you've got a creative offensive mind in Kellen Moore that uses a ton of play action, that does a lot of pre-snap motion. I think he wants to play in an innovative offense, and I think the Cowboys have the offensive line and the weapons to protect him. I think from that reason alone, I think that's why there's interest here.
And I think I've been mentioning this with other teams in this Russell Wilson trade tour, but he talks so much about legacy, and what better to enhance your legacy than going to Dallas, where they've won a bunch of Super Bowls, but it's been a long time since Dallas has really been a contender. So I think that is a big factor in this as well. There's no question that he's looking at the brand here and thinking that can take my legacy to the next level.
Absolutely. And I think it would be really fun to have him play with Mike McCarthy, because all those Packer fans that, you know, that hated Russell Wilson when he was robbing them of championships, I think that's a nice little subplot as well.
Absolutely. Now let's talk proposals here, because really we don't know how this is going to play out. Right now, I would say that there's a very minimal chance that Russell Wilson's moving this season, that he's going anywhere but Seattle. But let's just say that this offseason does not play out the way that Russell Wilson hopes it will. The Seahawks don't upgrade the offensive line. They don't show they're willing to spend a little bit of money to upgrade his pass protection, and this rift just becomes even bigger. And it reaches a point maybe after June 1st that a trade happens. The Cowboys, to me, would be the one team. I guess you could put the Raiders in there too, because Derek Carr had a really good season last year. He's been an underrated starter for a long time, and he's had to try to carry a team with a really bad defense. But the Cowboys, you could set up a trade potentially after June 1st that would involve Dak Prescott being swapped for Russell Wilson on his franchise tag, and the cap hits would be lower. How would you see a trade unfolding if you are Jerry Jones and you're trying to pull off this deal to get Russell Wilson and bring him to Dallas?
So it really starts with Dak Prescott, right, who the Cowboys are likely going to have to franchise here in the next couple of days. If they get to the draft and he still doesn't have a long-term deal and we're after the draft and he's now playing on that second franchise tag, Corbin, it feels pretty likely that his time in Dallas will probably be up after the 2021 season. So for the Cowboys, this is a chance to get a Super Bowl winning quarterback who is still only 33 years old, who has 3 years left on his contract. You swap him, you get a fairly cheap, all pro level corner or quarterback for the next 3 years. So I think that's the solution here for the Cowboys. If they just come to the conclusion that Dak Prescott's just not going to sign a long-term deal with this team, I think you cut bait and you try to do the best you can. And with Russell Wilson maybe out there on the trade block, that's a pretty great consolation prize.
And I think this, what makes it so interesting is I think it would have to be after June 1st in this scenario, just because of the amount of money we're talking about being thrown around. The Seahawks could not take Russell Wilson's $39 million dead cap hit and then bring Dak Prescott's franchise tag contract on. There's no way that they could pull that off. It would completely destroy their cap. They'd have to get rid of half their team, and they're set back for years to come. But after June 1st, maybe it would be feasible that a deal could be done. Do you think the Cowboys would have to give up anything else as part of this deal? I mean, obviously, Dak Prescott is a very good NFL quarterback, but I think you and I would probably both agree that Russell Wilson is a better quarterback than Dak Prescott. What else would it take to really put together a deal, especially if we're thinking of the June 1st structure, because obviously that's after the draft. So that really changes how things are going to look compensation-wise.
It's tough because I don't disagree with you that Wilson is the better quarterback, but what we have to factor in here is age, right? Dak Prescott's 27 years old, and Russell Wilson will be going into his age 33 season. While 33 isn't old for a quarterback, 6 years of an age difference is pretty stinking big in today's NFL. So I do think Dallas might have to throw in maybe a day two pick. I don't think DeCosta would be a first round pick, especially if Seattle was able to sign Dak Prescott to a long-term deal. You're basically just flipping contracts. So maybe a second round pick, maybe a conditional pick based on how well Dallas does in 2021. But in terms of value, Corbin, I think it's pretty close.
I think my one counter argument on that would be that Prescott is coming off a significant injury, and now, Russell Wilson has never missed a game in his entire career. He has been the Iron Man of the NFL. And so my counter would probably be in that case that you talk conditional picks. I would base it off of, you know, the stats that he puts together, and it could conditionally become a first round pick. Sure. And if I'm the Cowboys, I'm still more than happy to pull that trigger, because if Wilson's putting up 40-plus touchdown passes for me behind our offensive line, the weapons he's got, then we might just be in the running for a Super Bowl and take that big step that they have not been able to take for a couple of decades now.
And the thing with this being a trade that's potentially done after June 1st is it's 3 more months of seeing how Dak Prescott progresses through his injury, right? Mm-hmm. If we get to May and June and he's doing everything in workouts and he looks perfectly fine, then I think we're talking about maybe not having to give up too much extra. But if we're at June 1st and he's still not participating, he's still favoring that ankle, then we probably just don't have a trade at all, Corbin, because there's just no way that Seattle's going to trade Russell Wilson for an injured Dak Prescott, basically a year removed and still no positive signs with that injury. So I do think, you know, postponing this trade a few more months will give us some more information. But I don't disagree with you at all about a conditional pick that maybe turns into a first, depending on the team success of the Cowboys.
Yeah, and I think one other wrinkle, I don't expect this to happen, but one other wrinkle that could make this really fun after June 1st is if somehow you could get the Texans involved in this trade. Because from a Seahawks standpoint, to me, you're not moving Russell Wilson, the Iron Man of the NFL. You're not moving him in the middle of his prime unless you are getting another top five caliber quarterback, or you're getting a bunch of really early draft picks. Maybe you can get Trevor Lawrence if somehow Jacksonville got in the mix here. But if you had a three-team trade where the Cowboys got Wilson, Deshaun Watson went to Seattle, and then you could send Dak Prescott to the Texans, as far-fetched as it sounds, I feel like every team could win in that scenario, actually, especially after June 1st when the financial hits aren't as big.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting for the Texans, right? Because they could give Prescott – they can make him the highest paid quarterback in the league and say, hey, we're resetting our franchise. We're building it around you. Mm-hmm. You are in charge of everything going forward, and they can save face despite the disaster that the Deshaun Watson trade was, or the Deshaun Watson situation was, excuse me.
Yeah, and the Seahawks and the Cowboys, however this would play out, the Texans would also get some draft picks through a trade like that too. Correct. So they can continue building around Dak Prescott. So again, I don't think that happens. I think that's extremely far-fetched, but I think it could make sense for all three teams. And that's what makes this entire scenario really interesting, when I clearly see flames at the VMAC. I don't know the building's on fire, but we have passed the smoke stage here as far as these trade rumors are concerned. So who knows, a few months from now, this might be revisited when we get to June. If Russell Wilson's not happy and the Seahawks feel it's time to move on, then we could absolutely see a Cowboys-Seahawks trade down the line. It's been a blast, Marcus. Thanks for joining me.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Corbin.